Welcome to episode 42 of Practical Defense, an interview with John. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addix. We have a fantastic interview this week with a good friend of mine, John. He takes us through the entire ordeal of being stabbed, from the interactions with a transient leading up to the attack to the follow-up with the police months later. But before we get to the interview, I have a few announcements. First, I want to apologize to those people who've had trouble downloading last week's podcast. It went live right on schedule last Sunday, but the RSS feed didn't propagate properly and not everyone could see it. Now, as part of my normal process, I checked all of my feeds, including iTunes, and it appeared to be fine, so I thought everything was cool. It didn't appear on my own site, but since it was showing everywhere else, I thought that my script had bugged out and the problem was on my server. And I was still getting lots of downloads, but just not the normal volume we see weekly. But as it turns out, many folks couldn't see it, even on iTunes. To my surprise, I started getting emails Thursday night from people asking when the show was going to post. So I refreshed the RSS feed Friday morning, and that seemed to take care of whenever it was. Now, hopefully it won't happen again, but if it does, please do not wait until Thursday to let me know about it. I've only skipped one show in the past, and when I posted late, it really hasn't been past Monday. Now for some really good news. I have a monthly recurring column coming out for the Taekwondo Times magazine. Now, this is different from the feature article that I had published last November. These will be shorter, but published every month. And my first set of articles will start on their website, and then eventually everything will move to the print magazine. The first article should post to their website at taekwondotimes.com sometime next week. The title of the column is Raising Awareness, and the subject matter is pretty much sort of kind of the same material I cover here on the podcast. Practical ways of keeping you and your family safe without having to be a martial arts master or Army Ranger. I'll keep everyone updated on the articles and post links to them from my website at alexaddix.com. You don't need a subscription to read the articles on the website, so be certain to stop by, give them a read, and let me know what you think. And of course, we also have our weekly tip from Kristen at kristensguide.com. If you want to keep your family and neighbors connected when the phone lines go out, try getting a set of two-way radios. Most can use standard or rechargeable batteries and can even communicate with other radios several miles away. Plus, they're simple enough even for the most technologically challenged people, inexpensive, and don't require a mobile phone service plan. Communication is key in preventing and even addressing a crisis situation. We'll be right back with our interview with John. All right, John. Well, thanks for being on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I know from, you're a longtime friend of mine, so I've heard the story before, but it illustrates several key points, and that's why I asked you on, so we could share those key points.
Great. Thanks.
Now, the story that I want to go over with you is when you were attacked by a transient with a knife.
Right.
Now, where were you?
I was in Amsterdam. I was living in Amsterdam. This was the early 90s. I had taken a year off from college and was living and working in Amsterdam. And I had, my mother had come to visit me. We had been seeing the sights of Amsterdam. I was going home by myself. It was about 10 o'clock, Wednesday evening. I was at Central Station in Amsterdam. If anyone's ever been, it's very big, very prominent Central Station. And I was waiting for my tram.
Okay. Now, is this, what do you mean by tram? Is it a subway? Is it an elevated train?
It's an elevated train. It's like light rail. So, probably more common for people maybe in Portland, but similar to what you see in Boston, but not as substantial as a subway.
Now, as I recall also from the story, you were saying that you had just had dinner with your mother.
Yes.
And you had just convinced your mother how safe the trams were before she left and took a car home and you were going to take the train.
Yes. So she had encouraged me to take a cab. And I said, no, I don't need to take a cab. I had money for a cab. I said, no, I take the trams all the time. 10 o'clock was not especially late. Amsterdam was very safe. very clean, certainly by American standards. I had never had any problems, so I felt it was a good, reasonable choice.
Now, just to be clear, you're actually an American citizen.
Yes.
And you were just over there, and Amsterdam is in which country, just for all the viewers?
It is in the Netherlands, what we would commonly say as Holland.
Now, as far as density, I mean, it was 10 o'clock at night, and it was a weeknight.
Yeah.
How many people were there at the tram with you?
Actually, Central Station was pretty quiet.
Was it vacant like what you would see in the horror movies? It was just you and this other guy?
Well,
or were there other people standing around?
There were other people. There are other people waiting for other trams, walking in and out of Central Station. For our particular tram, it was just the two of us. But it's outdoors. So when I say it's at Central Station, I guess I should clarify. Yes, there's Central Station behind us, where the trains would come in from, you know, all parts of the country in Europe. But we're outside at what's basically a little bus shelter in the night air in what looks like basically a big plaza where there are there are tracks like for light rail, like for the T in Boston, sort of a thing.
Or maybe the L in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, the trams in Holland aren't as, you know, anyone who's been on like a New York subway or a Washington subway, even the L, those are very big, substantial sort of train cars. The tram was a little bit more lighter.
Okay, so it's like a bus on rails.
I guess so. I haven't been back in a while.
Now, what was your first contact with this person? Now, he had actually wound up attacking you with a knife, but let's lead into how the interaction became, because you spoke with him for a little bit beforehand.
Yeah, we were waiting for the tram, and it seemed like a long time to wait for the tram. So I saw him there. He looked homeless. He looked unwashed, unkempt. And we had had exchanges. I believe he came up to me a couple times. He did not speak English.
So he was speaking to you in
Dutch.
In Dutch, you think?
Yeah. No.
Did you actually be able to recognize it as Dutch?
Yeah. I mean, I it sounded like Dutch.
Okay.
And I didn't, but I don't speak Dutch. And I just told him, oh, I don't know where the train is. You know, gave him my sort of standard shrug of the shoulders. We never got too close previously. But so he did approach me, I think, two or three times.
So he would approach, he would say something to you that you didn't understand.
Correct.
And then he would step away.
Correct.
But he kept coming back.
Yes, that's right.
Now, the reason why I want to make a point of the language issue is that, yes, you were in a country where you didn't speak the language, but that doesn't mean that the person, a transient or somebody who's mentally ill, will come up to you and speak anything coherent anyway. From personal experience growing up in West Los Angeles, Santa Monica, there's a huge homeless population, and they often speak gibberish. They'll walk up to you and get in your face and just blah, 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 blah at you, and you have no idea. To them, I'm certain it's a coherent language, but you have no idea what they're saying. I mean, they wouldn't, even the people, you know, would give them names. So that's the preacher. And everyone knew the preacher because he was standing on the corner holding a book. I don't even know if it was a Bible, but he would be holding a book and screaming inane things that made absolutely no sense. But he was out there having a good old time. So the point is that even if you did speak the same language, he may not be speaking coherently.
Sure, sure. I did learn more later from the police about what he thought he was saying.
We'll get to that at the end.
Okay.
So he's come up to you now three times,
mm-hmm.
and he hasn't seemed aggressive.
No,
was he just was like, oh, just trying to chat maybe with you.
Yeah, that was the sense I had. I mean, I definitely kept my distance because, not that I was necessarily very wary, but he wasn't the sort of person you want to stand next to. He was kind of smelly.
Okay,
as well.
So you could even smell him.
Oh yeah,
you were close enough that you could smell him.
Or
is it so bad that you didn't have to be that close?
You didn't have to be that close.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when did he become violent? And do you remember anything that might have triggered it?
I recall, I mean, we've been waiting a good 20 plus minutes, maybe 30 minutes.
That seems like a long time to wait for a train.
It is. I think, you know, the trams do run a little bit less frequently. I was sort of debating, oh, should I, you know, walk? Because it was only It was probably only a couple miles, and I had walked in the past, so I could have. And it was a nice night, but I was, like a lot of people, thinking, oh, I'll just wait a little bit longer. But he came up to me this last time, and again, he seemed more agitated. And again, I was like, you know, I'm sorry, I don't speak Dutch. I don't know when the tram is coming. And he kept just getting closer and closer, and I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell you. Then what I recall, he just sort of angrily swung at me, and I really thought he was trying to punch me. And I...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but... No. So when he swung at you, was it like an overhead hammer? Was it a hook? Or, I mean... And did anything predicate it? Did his voice go up? Did he just, you said he seemed more agitated.
Yeah.
But I mean, did he do a wind up for the punch? I mean, what happened? Do you
I
even
think
remember?
It was more of a hook. I mean, he was swinging, I think, across and he was with his arm.
Swinging at your head. You motioned swinging at
your
head.
Yeah, I think he was swinging at my head. And I remember putting my left arm up to block him, to block what I thought was his punch. And I think I stepped back.
Okay.
I'm not sure. And then I decided, okay, this is not a situation I want to be in. I don't know what the heck's going on. And so I ran into Central Station. I ran away.
Okay.
Well, actually, I think I ran back about 20 or 30 feet, saw he wasn't pursuing me, and then decided to walk into Central Station and then take a cab.
Was it just a single swing?
Yes.
It was not like he was jumping on you and was going to try and pin you to the ground. He just took a kind of a wild swing.
Yes.
Okay. So he's taking this wild swing at you. You've blocked what you think to be a punch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you quite correctly ran away. No, that's one of the things we teach is run away. Run away. There's no reason to stick around, especially on an empty tram station. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Well,
sensible thing is to get the hell out of there.
Well, I guess. I mean, the other thing is, and you know, I don't want to seem insensitive, but he was really, I mean, he was dirty and smelly. He's just not a person you want to scrap with. I mean, I'm not really saying Mr. Clean Cut I wanted to scrap with either. I just, running away seemed like a good option, but I really didn't know what was going on. I didn't know why he was agitated, why what just took place. So it seemed like a good idea to run away. That was really what I remember at the time.
And also, just for background, you don't have any martial arts training at all.
No. I did fence in high school, but I wouldn't really call that a martial art.
But as far as, you know, being able to handle physical confrontation
no.
on the street, you haven't had martial arts, you haven't had boxing, wrestling, nothing like that. So you're just average guy being attacked by crazy transient.
Pretty much.
Okay. So what, after the attack, what was going through your mind? What were you thinking? I was like, holy cow, where did that come from? Or like, I need to get out of here, or that guy's nuts, or... Man, I need to find the police.
What I remember is that after I ran away and I said it wasn't following me, my arm hurt, my left arm. So I went into Central Station and I pulled my coat sleeve back. And I very distinctly remember looking down and saying, huh, I'm bleeding.
Okay. Now, how long was it that before you noticed that you were bleeding? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 seconds?
No, a few minutes at most.
Okay.
So it wasn't a lot. And so I was like, well, okay, I guess I better find a bathroom and clean myself off and then get a cab home, because I'm definitely getting a cab home now.
Okay. So also, with something we didn't go over in the story, is that it actually was during the winter and you were wearing a heavy winter coat.
Yeah, I mean, it was... It was probably October or November. It wasn't super cold, but yeah, I was definitely wearing a winter coat. I guess it was a little puffy. Puffy coats were in at one point. So yeah, so when I pulled it back, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really the sort of, what am I trying to say? It was a coat. I mean, it wasn't like a sweatshirt or anything like that. So I pulled it all the way back up to my elbow and could see that I was bleeding from about the middle of my forearm.
And that was the arm that you blocked with?
Yeah.
And still at that point, you didn't think that you should go to the police. You eventually did go to the police, but I'm trying to delve down into what triggered you contacting the police at that point.
Well, okay. The police contacted me.
The police contacted you.
First off, so...
How do they know who you were and how to find you?
So, for some reason, whether it was the adrenaline or the excitement, I didn't recognize where the men's room was from the signage in Central Station. So, I'm this guy with my coat pulled back on one arm and bleeding a little bit. I mean, and I want to clarify, I was not, like, profusely, this is not, like, some horror movie sort of a thing, looking for a bathroom. And so two police officers were walking towards me. And so I actually walked towards them and said, in English, which way to the men's room? And as they said to me, can we help you?
Okay.
And they asked me if I was hurt. And I said, oh, no, this crazy guy in the tram just tried to punch me and I'm fine. And they said, well, would you show us? So I said, okay. So we walked out of Central Station. We could see the guy, whatever it was, some yards, 10, 20 yards ahead of us. And they said, is that the guy? And I said, yes. Or I think I may have pointed to the guy. There's only one guy at my tram stop. So,
and also, just a quick step back. The police spoke English.
Oh, yeah, it's Holland. Everyone speaks English except crazy transients.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, there was no language problem for me any of the time I lived in Amsterdam, with the one exception of crazed transient.
Okay. So you pointed them out.
I pointed them out, and they said, well, he looks homeless. And I said, yeah. And they said, and he looks like he's someone who needs help. And we can't help him. We can't go up and arrest him or anything unless you are going to press charges. And I really was reluctant to press charges. I didn't really want to get involved. It was now, I don't know, like 11 o'clock at night and or so. But they were right that the guy did need help. So I reluctantly agreed to press charges. And so they walked over with me to interview him.
So, as he walked over, did he try and flee?
Nope.
Did he turn and speak to the police? Did he ignore them? Did he even recognize that you guys were there?
He did.
I'm trying to get to his mental state.
So, we walked up. I stood slightly behind the police. They were between me and him.
I would do the same.
They spoke to him in Dutch. They asked him what was going on, and he told them that I tried to mug him. They told this to me. They said, he says, you tried to mug him. Is that true? And I said, no, why would I try to rob him? I've got 100 guilders in my pocket and I can pay for a cab. And I was, not, dressed like I was homeless. So they believed that, and it was okay. True. So that I think they told him, well, we don't think that's true. And we think you should come with us for questioning. At which point, there was a clatter on the cobblestones behind him.
Okay, clatter.
Look, yeah, he dropped something metallic. It turned out to be a Swiss Army knife.
Okay.
They then said to him, is that your Swiss Army knife? Was that your knife? He said, no. Okay. At which point, they were pretty clear that he had problems. So they carefully picked up and bagged the knife. And they handcuffed him.
Okay.
And they then escorted us to the police station in the basement of Central Station.
Okay. All right. So to this point, there are actually several issues that should be made clear. One is that you didn't know you were stabbed.
No, I really didn't know I was stabbed until I saw the Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, you never saw the knife. You didn't realize it was in his hand.
Nope.
And then after he had been struck with it, it took you several minutes to realize you had even been struck with a knife.
Yeah, I mean, I just assumed, really, that he punched me and that he must have... It didn't really occur to me why I was bleeding. I was just like, oh, I've been punched in the arm and I'm bleeding.
Okay.
I think the sort of excitement, not in the positive sense, but the heightened tension and whatnot of the event, I may not have been thinking all the way through on that one.
Yeah, so that, well, I mean, with adrenaline and the attack and everything else, it's very important to realize that you may not know you've been injured, mm-hmm, because of the adrenaline.
For sure.
And And that's one of the reasons why we have adrenaline, is to suppress all the pain and allow us to flee and get out of there, fight or flight. You know, we need the adrenaline to get out of there. We need the adrenaline to stay and fight if we need to. Another example of this is maybe 4 to 5 months ago, there was a case in Los Angeles here where a student from USC, now USC is a very prestigious private college and very, very wealthy. I mean, it's like thousands and thousands of dollars to go per semester. The other problem is that it's in a bad neighborhood. I mean, it's this beautiful, wonderful, very expensive private campus stuck right in the middle of one of the worst parts of Los Angeles. One of the students had left campus and was walking down the street and got to an altercation with one of the local residents. And I don't know what happened. The local resident came through a front gate out onto the sidewalk and then got into a physical confrontation with a student and one of his friends. The guy thought he was being punched in the belly. He was just being punched and pummeled by this guy, and then the guy ran away. And he didn't realize that the guy had a knife, and he was being stabbed. So what he thought was just punches, he felt the punches and the blunt blow, but he never felt the blade. He died of his wounds because he didn't seek medical attention soon enough because he didn't realize that he was cut and bleeding and was going to die and was a life-threatening situation. He just thought he'd been hit in the stomach a bunch of times.
I could really believe that. I should also clarify, I was very lucky between my puffy winter jacket and the lack of expertise in my attacker's use of the Swiss Army knife. I had a very small, I mean, superficial doesn't even really.
But you still have a scar.
Yeah, I do.
You've shown it. You've got a scar still.
I have a very small scar. It's, you know.
It's 2 inches.
No, I don't think it's really. Maybe it's an inch but it's a very small scar. It didn't bleed that long, but no, I certainly, I was very lucky. I do want to say, but I could imagine being attacked and not realizing being stabbed for sure. I think that really is very plausible, particularly in an area where you might not think to check if it's covered by clothes.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And that's one of the reasons. In fact, you actually did take my knife course. One of the things we teach after, you know, if you have any physical confrontation, whether you think it's punches or kicks, or you know that a weapon's been used, one of the things we teach is self-triage, and you pat yourself down from head to toe and look for blood. Whether you know you've been punched or you know you've been stabbed, you've had any confrontation, you always check yourself because you may have an injury that you're not aware of. And if your friend's been in it, you check your friend. But that's one of the standard things we teach in our reality-based classes. Now, the other point that I want to bring up is the fact that the transient accused you of attacking him.
That's right.
And that actually turns out to be a very common tactic by criminals. What they do is they reverse the tables on you. And this is something that I was taught in my concealed carry handgun class. What happens is that, for example, somebody's coming up to mug you, and you have a legal permit to carry a concealed weapon. And so you draw your pistol on him and point it at him and say, back off. And he decides that he's got a knife and you've got a gun and it's better for him to leave. So he runs away and you go, well, great. Thank God I had this weapon and I protected myself against an offender armed with a weapon, and you put it away. What this guy then does is he runs down the street to the nearest payphone and picks up the payphone and calls 911 and says, some guy in a green shirt and blue jeans just pointed his gun at me. This guy is crazy. You got to come take care of him. Ding, and then hangs up. So now the police hear gun, they have a general description of you, and they send out several squad cars looking for you as being the criminal. In addition, there could be other witnesses. There could be somebody standing across the street, and they don't see the knife, but they sure as heck will see you draw a gun and point it at this guy and have the other guy run away. So what do? They get on their cell phones, and they call and say, hey, I just saw this guy in a green shirt and blue jeans pull a gun on somebody and the other guy ran away. You need to send somebody out to take care of this guy. And then they get a full description of that person and everything else, and then they hang up. And again, another something pointing to you being the criminal in this case. So the way that you defend against this is that you have to be the person to call 911 first. Do not wait. As soon as the guy is gone, your first thing is, boom, get on the cell phone and say, I was attacked by some guy in a yellow shirt and shorts, wearing sandals. He was about this age, about this height, and he ran away. Please send somebody. And then they ask for more details, then you can give more details. But at that point, you have covered yourself as being the victim. And generally, they put more weight on the first call that they get. So you have to be first. It is very, very important to be first, because the criminal is going to try to point the finger at you. Now remember, he didn't stick around to give a statement. He just called in blindly and hung up and then ran away and got as much distance as possible. But he was trying to make as much trouble for you. So again, right here, the perfect illustration. You went to the police. You said, I was attacked. You've got a bleeding wound. And this guy is standing there saying, no, he attacked me. It was self-defense. And then he dropped his weapon. Fortunately, there was such a great disparity between you two, and it was very obvious this other guy was in serious trouble and needed help. And I was actually very pleased to hear that the police actually said he needed help.
Oh, well, in Holland, they're much more socially oriented to helping people get treatment. You know, I want to say, I don't think it helped his cause that he immediately denied that the weapon was his, that they saw him drop. That goes to his lack of mental clarity.
Yes, but even despite his mental state, he still knew he had a weapon and he needed to drop it and ditch it as fast as possible, because they were about to pat him down and take him to lockup, which he has probably already been to and been through before.
Probably.
And he didn't want to be caught with a weapon with your blood on it. So even in his altered state, he still had enough cognizance to be able to try and do that. So they take him away at this point.
Yes, they take us both downstairs. They take him away. They take a detailed statement from me. They take me to the hospital, where I get an Everfun intramuscular tetanus shot.
Okay. So did you go with them to the lockup? Or did they send another car to take you to the hospital?
The four of us walked back into Central Station through a secured police door downstairs. Maybe even down an escalator. I'm not sure, actually. I'm trying to remember right now. Where he was handcuffed to the all-white, very white police station. Where okay. they then took him down a hallway into, I presume, some holding room or some other processing room. And then they had me sit down and took a statement from me.
Okay. But they still hadn't gone to the police side. So they realized the wound wasn't huge at that point. And
it wasn't still bleeding. It wasn't still... You know, that's what I want to try to say. It was not like a gory movie. There was no, you know, big spurting, pumping special effect. It was just a very superficial...
Not so superficial that it didn't leave a scar.
Fair enough.
You're underplaying it a bit. So then do they take you to the hospital or they tell you to go to the hospital?
Oh, no. They take me to the hospital.
So they put you in a squad car and they take you down, or they call an EMT or an ambulance for you?
No, let's see... There are a whole bunch of cops actually going to the hospital in a police van. I think they may have been changing shifts at that point. So I was in a police van with a bunch of other cops, and we drove down to the hospital.
And then what was that like? Did you just check in on your own? Did they take photos for evidence?
No photos. There's no check-in. I mean, it's, even though I wasn't a citizen, it's a state healthcare system. So. They don't need to check me in. The cops brought me over and I sat down for a while, and eventually a doctor came out, spoke to me in English, gave me my tetanus shot.
Okay.
In the leg.
You didn't need any stitches?
No.
Okay. No.
Oh, and I did get a big old bandage. Okay. There you go. Well, no, I mentioned it only because then I went home. I think I then took a cab. But I'm sure the police would have driven me if I'd wanted to. They were very, very accommodating in Amsterdam. So the next morning, I meet my mother for breakfast. And I'm also very tired because I get home. You know, everything takes time. The police station takes time. The hospital takes time. I'm home by like 2 or 2:30. So she says, oh, what happened? What's up with the bandage? And I have to tell her that I got stabbed, which she was a little... I mean, it's the only verb to use. I could say attacked, but it's not very specific. So it sounds worse than it was. So she was quite upset.
And so you had to tell your mother that you were stabbed on the very, very safe train system that you had convinced her that you were going to take home because you didn't think a cab was necessary.
Correct.
That must have been a heck of a conversation.
Yes. As I pointed out to her, random things happen and nothing's 100% safe and I was fine.
Standing across the table from your mother with a big old bandage on your arm. Everything's fine, Mom. Don't worry. It was just a stab.
Exactly. It was a good conversation.
Yeah. I don't think anybody would envy that conversation.
No.
Now, the next day, you actually had to go back to the station to make a statement, right? You had to go back down?
Yeah, they then had me see a detective at the station, the main station, not the train station, at the main police station for that district. So, I guess in looking back on it, what we went to when we were in the train station was probably the very small sort of, not temporary, but...
Like a local outpost or
exactly.
A kiosk or so it sounds more formal than a kiosk.
It was more formal. I mean, it definitely had separate rooms, but it was not their official full-fledged precinct station. So I had to go to the precinct house and speak to a detective who was now assigned to the case who would be responsible for it. And then he took my statement. And again, it's Holland. He took my statement interviewing me in English, which he then translated into Dutch onto his form. At the end of which he then translated back from Dutch into English for me so I could then swear and sign to it.
Nice. Okay, so you never read the actual report because it was in a language that you didn't understand.
Correct.
Okay. I'm certain it was still accurate.
I'm sure it was, though it was the detective who really brought the gravity of the situation home to me where he said, so what do you think would have happened if you hadn't blocked? Which I never thought about. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know. And he said, do you think he would have stabbed you in the head or the face? And I was like, oh, I guess so. I mean, because even though I know that my attacker had a knife, I was still, I think, almost like a hangover from my first impression that I was being punched.
Right.
So...
Because you never saw the blade.
I never saw
you,
the blade.
You never saw it until he dropped it when the police showed up.
Correct.
That was your first revelation that you had actually seen the weapon was then.
Yes.
Other than the fact that you had a wound on your arm. It could have been scratched from something sticky on his arm.
Yeah, who knows? So it was really only then that I really got this sense that, oh, he could have stabbed me in the eye or the head. And that would have been much more catastrophic than... was ultimately more of a story than a wound or a scar. Though there is a small scar.
Did they ever call you in to a lineup? Or ever call you in to testify at a trial? Were you ever notified of the outcome?
I did get a packet of victims assistance programs, which was in Dutch. And I did not... And they did tell me that they would be available to me. At least some of them would be available to me as a non-citizen. I did not avail myself of that. I was quite a bit jumpy for people running behind me for some months after that. I remember walking to the store one afternoon and really quite sort of frightened and turned around after hearing someone running up behind me. And of course, it was just some kid running. For whatever reason, so there's nothing. But yeah, I was quite jumpy. But I got something in the mail later in Dutch, which I think was the result of the trial. But I don't ultimately know what happened to him. But the other thing I do know is the police did tell me that he was a coke addict. That's one thing I guess I should say. So when the police were done interviewing me, they briefed me on what my attacker said. First, they said that he was a coke addict who's clearly going through some psychosis. He believed I had been following him all night and that he had been trying to question me about why I was trying to follow him and take his stuff. But he was still so deranged that when he was interviewed by the detective, he refused to sign his statement to the detective that he had just given.
Okay.
So he had some significant mental problems, I think, as well.
Was he actually, did they mention if he was on drugs at the time, or was it just a psychotic episode on or off the drugs?
I don't know. I recall them saying he was a coke addict and that he was having a psychotic episode. That was really all that I remember of that.
Okay. It was a few years ago.
Yes.
So the last thing that you heard was this packet in the mail saying it was the resolution of something that you couldn't read because it was in Dutch.
Yeah. I mean, I could have had any one of a number of people I worked with translate it for me, but this was a number of months later. I really wanted to put it behind me. I was still a little guilty about getting him arrested.
Guilty about getting him arrested?
Yeah. We don't even have to keep that if you don't want.
No, but, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly had problems. I mean, that was the thing. I was pleased he was getting help for his problems, and hopefully, you know, in jail he was getting some sort of detox, but yeah. I really didn't want to go and testify.
Testifying's scary. Courts are scary, very official.
Yeah.
Rigid, scary, unknown.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
So. And I had really put it behind me and moved on. I guess the only thing I would say is one of the things about taking the knife class that was interesting was your encouragement to students to run away, which I found funny because it never struck me as it's not a very macho thing to say to someone, oh, you should definitely run away if you're ever attacked. But I think looking back on it, it was the smartest thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it prevented further attack.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you liked the course too.
Yeah, I did. It was very instructive, and it really also to really attack someone with a knife, you really have to be in a very different frame of mind, which I never really thought about before that.
Okay, well, thanks for everything. I appreciate your time. Appreciate you sharing the story with all of us.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm certain it's going to be very educational to the listeners.
Glad to hear it.
And hopefully we'll have you on again, but for something else.
Sounds good.
Well, that does it for this episode of Practical Defense. Thanks again to John for taking the time to share his experiences with us. And don't forget to check out my new column on taekwondotimes.com. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.